Listen to Learn Audio Tapes presents Part 3 of Conflict Resolution for Couples by Dr. Susan Heitler. Part 3 focuses on the steps entailed in converting upsets to positive experiences. And now, Conflict Resolution for Couples, Part 3, with Dr. Susan Heitler.
Cleaning up after toxic spills. Let's look now at what happens when things have gone terribly wrong. I'd like to define terribly wrong. Terribly wrong means hurt feelings, upset, intensity of expression. In each household, what's considered out of bounds intensity of expression varies. For instance, I myself personally have very little tolerance for upsets. So if somebody speaks in an irritated voice within our house, I consider that out of bounds and something that needs to be cleaned up. That was a kind of a toxic spill in our household. Now, I'm a psychologist. I do this for a living, so I have pretty high standards for myself, and I recognize that most families are going to have more upsets than that. Still, there are levels of escalation. The level of escalation is a factor of how long did the upset go on. Was it raised voices? Did it go from raised voices to nasty words? Nasty words can have a remarkably damaging impact. Either nasty in the sense of getting vulgar, which really upsets some people, or nasty in the sense of a you statement, an accusation, a blame, a criticism, a lot of whiny complaints. So nasty words can have a major impact. The next level of escalation is into violence of some sort. That's going to be an even more potent impact. The lower the level of escalation before a couple puts the ceiling on and says, whoops, we're out of bounds, let's pull a halt, the happier the marriage. The more water under the bridge, the more bad water, toxic spills that go on, the more bit by bit people get too wounded and eventually say, hey, wait a minute. For sure, the more pain, the more likelihood eventually somebody says, hey, life's too short. It's not necessary to have that pain. It's just not at all necessary. If a couple can learn to disengage when things go wrong, if a couple can learn to say, whoops, we're beginning to get into hurting each other here, let's back off, then they each are responsible for self-soothing, for calming themselves down. Once they're both back in a normal, non-turbulent state, have found their own sense of self and confidence and are able to say, wait a minute, I'm okay, I just kind of got off, then is the time for them to re-engage and make a fresh start, either at solving the problem that they were trying to deal with in the beginning or at going back and looking at what happened and learning from it. That's the key to cleaning up after toxic spills, after upsets, to see those upsets as an opportunity to learn. Now, in families that are dysfunctional, that is not how upsets are seen. Upsets are seen as opportunities for who's to blame or fault finding. When things go wrong, the more there's finger pointing, it's your fault, well, you should do this different, the less learning there is, the less change, the less growth. Who's to blame just doesn't work. Let's go back to those principles that sounded probably so simple and easy at the beginning about who you talk about. Wendy gets to talk about Wendy. Steve gets to talk about Steve. And nowhere is that more important than after there's been an upset. Now, if Steve is only talking about Steve, there's no way he can point out to Wendy what she did wrong, right? Or find fault with her or blame her for what happened. He's only talking about what he experienced. His job in cleaning up after an upset is to go through what did he experience and share that with Wendy. Wendy's job is to really hear that. Remember how she has to listen? Really trying to digest it. Listening for what makes sense. What's the useful information? And then, remember, we need symmetry. So then Wendy has to share What was she experiencing in that upset? During the time when Wendy's talking, what's Steve doing? He's really listening, really trying to understand what her experience was. He's not getting defensive. He doesn't have to get defensive because Wendy is talking about Wendy and her experience, not what Steve did. When they have that data out on the table, then there's the potential for them to sit back and say, oh my goodness, to say, I didn't realize that was the impact of what I was doing. I'm sorry. And it will at that point really come from the heart. It's not going to be a dutiful apology. It's going to come from, oh my goodness, I inadvertently hurt the person that I really care about. An apology isn't enough, though. Apology is a real good step in the process. We've had first understanding, then we've had an apology, and then comes learning. Now, Wendy is responsible for figuring out what Wendy needs to learn. Steve is responsible for figuring out what there was in that incident that he can learn. If one of the couple wants to ask the other, is there something I could have done different? Well, that's sometimes helpful. It's not the essence, though. The main thing is for us each to take responsibility for understanding our own part and what went on. And then to check out with the other person, if I had done this, would that have been better for you? Would that have avoided the problem? Have you got the system? Shall we try it out? Let's go for it. Steve, you have a question.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that it's really hard to resist that urge when Steve feels like he knows what Wendy should learn from what she did wrong, you know, and wants to help her find that.
Absolutely. That's where you need to go on manual control, not automatic pilot. Mm. When somebody is angry, automatically the finger pointing comes out. Anger and focusing on the other person go hand in hand. That's why it becomes really important to do that intermediate step of disengaging from each other, calming yourself down, because until you've calmed yourself down, the danger is you're going to just get into that blaming, that attacking. At no time is it such a problem that our eyes are pointed outwards as when we're angry. Our eyes are pointed outwards, so all of us, our first impulse when something goes wrong is to see what someone out there did. It takes insight, redirecting your eyes inward. Wait, what was I doing there? What was I afraid of? What bothered me? What was I wanting? That last question is usually the most important. What was I wanting? Those are all I self-explorations. That's what turns an upset into productive learning. Now, remember symmetry. You can learn a lot if you alone are doing this insight-oriented learning process instead of the blaming. And you'll feel a lot better about it if your spouse simultaneously is doing the same. Yes, question.
So if it really is a little one-sided, I mean, if there really was a genuine attack,
yes,
one person is feeling very hurt, very wounded, very, you know, I mean, what if the other person doesn't reciprocate?
A couple ways to answer that. First, there's a question of punctuation of the sequence. Family therapists talk about where's the capital letter and where's the period when you talk about what happened. If the capital letter comes at the beginning of, well, look, you got so angry. If that's the beginning of the behavior sequence, then it looks like it's the angry person's fault. He or she said something really mean or vulgar or hurtful. If you back up a step or two, that person wouldn't be angry unless there was something that had occurred to which they reacted with vulnerable feelings. Nobody is making anybody feel a certain way. Let's be clear about that. Still, if one person is angry, usually they're responding to something. And it's important to find out what they were responding to. Now, people vary in how thin-skinned or thick-skinned they are. Thin-skinned people get upset at things that to the next person might not feel like an insult or a hurt. So it may be that somebody got upset because they do get upset more readily. That's okay. They just have to be able to talk about it. They have to learn not to act out being upset, but rather to say, I'm upset. Let's talk about what's going on. Rather than act upset and get louder or angrier or attacking or worse physical violence, they need to be able to acknowledge, I'm getting upset. If they're too upset to talk in a constructive way, remember what I said needs to be done. Disengage. So that you can each calm yourselves down. And then re-engage. Taking a lot of responsibility for your own emotions. I want to add a little more to your question because it's a very good one that has a lot of ramifications. The question is, what if it looks like it really is all the other person's fault? So the first thing I said is probably something wrong with how you're looking at the sequence. You need to factor what happened before the person got mad and add that to the understanding. Second response is, it takes two to tango. It almost always, when there's an upset, means that each of you did something that had you done it different, things would have turned out different. It doesn't mean you did something bad or awful. It means had you done something different, it would have turned out different. So there's some learning for both people. Even though I've said it takes two to tango, and there's always some learning for each person, that's not 100% correct. It takes two to tango implies equal levels of responsibility or equal levels of getting off track. There's always the example of the bank robber and the bank teller. Yes, they were both participants, and one may have had radically more impact than the other. So if, for instance, one person cooked what the other didn't like for dinner and was being a little bit inconsiderate, if they'd thought about it, they would have not cooked that. But the other person comes back with a response that's way out of proportion, starts shouting, criticizing, getting physically violent. That's really out of proportion to something the other person doesn't like for dinner. That begins to be a little more like the bank robber and the bank teller. That's something the two of you really need to talk about. Where is that severe response coming from? What can be done to help so that that doesn't keep occurring? It doesn't mean there's not something both people can learn. It may mean that somebody has a big problem that needs major attention, and the other person also has a piece to look at. Having a bigger problem needn't be something that somebody feels ashamed about or embarrassed to acknowledge, but rather needs to be looked at and dealt with. Information is always friendly. You're better off with information than not having information. So that was a more lengthy answer to that question, which was a very good question. There was another question back there.
Yeah, what if you have somebody who's taking a situation and it's not so much a conflict, but it bothers, say, me, for instance, and they take it jokingly, and they don't take it seriously. They think, you know, they kid about it, and then it's over to them. I don't think it's funny to me.
Right. It's very important that as a couple, you need to have an agreed routine for how you sit down and talk over upsets. An upset for one counts as an upset for both. If it bothered one person, it's eventually going to be corrosive on the relationship and therefore will affect both of you. Couples need to have a way to give each other clear signals. Wait, we need to put into motion our ability to clean up after toxic spills. Okay, how to do that cleaning up? A few minutes ago, we talked about the process. Let's see how much we remember as we walk Wendy and Steve through talking through an upset the night before. They were at a party on Saturday night. Looked like it was going to be fun. In fact, Wendy had great fun. She met a lot of people and talked with a lot of people. It was not fun for Steve. So our first step is for each of them to say what they experienced. While one is saying, the other needs to be listening. With that listening that's very actively trying to digest, trying to understand. Steve, how about if you start? In general, the person who was uncomfortable needs to launch or initiate these kinds of discussions. Just share what you experienced at the party with Wendy.
Well, I thought this would be an opportunity
to enter into the world of the things that you talk about, that you want to talk about.
What was the hard part for you?
The hard part was that I didn't feel included.
Do you know what he's referring to?
We talked about it. At the time the party was going on, I didn't realize that he had those feelings.
So maybe you need to ask for a little more detail to be sure you understand at this point what triggered that feeling of being left out.
It started the moment that we got there, and Brian at the door greeted you, whisked you away to your friends, and I think we talked once or twice in the middle of the evening over the punch bowl, and that was it.
Hold on just a second. That's mostly a description of what you were observing happened with her. See if you can backtrack and fill in now what you experienced first when Brian said hello to her at the door.
Jealousy, right off the bat.
Jealousy. And then as she was talking with other people, what feelings came up for you?
I felt left out. I felt stupid again, not knowing what to say.
Okay, I'm going to stop you a minute. Can you see the pattern, what we're doing? To some extent, there has to be a little bit of information about what the other person was doing. The bulk of the spotlight, though, needs to be on Steve and his expressing what he was feeling. What are you picking up, Wendy? What's the information that you're getting now that you didn't have even when you talked before?
That his feelings were really hurt, that, again, he felt stupid, which I wasn't aware of.
What's the feeling that comes up for you now as you hear?
Well, I feel sorry. It was unintentional on my part.
This is very, very important, what Wendy has said just now. Somehow, we can deal with hurt feelings when we know it wasn't intended by the other person. That statement, "I'm sorry, I really didn't mean to have that impact," goes a long way. Let's switch around, switch to the other side. Steve, maybe you can ask Wendy what was going on with her during that time.
What did you feel at the party?
I was having a great time. You know, I had had a couple of drinks, and I got into conversation with people, and I just sort of lost track of time, how much time, how long we had even been there, and I sort of forgot.
Steve, what are you picking up? What are you digesting as she says that?
That it was unintentional. And yes, it is easy to lose track of time. To lose track of your husband. It's very difficult because there's something powerful about me being angry at her, and it's hard. I have to weaken myself to say, yes, I understand you didn't mean it. That is so hard.
Yes, it's confusing what's powerful and what's weak. Often we think that what's powerful is to sound loud and angry. In fact, anger gives us a feeling of power. It's not powerful, though, to be angry in terms of getting your needs met. If to be powerful is to be able to get what you want, getting angry is exactly counterproductive. So, Steve, your comment is right on track. Somehow, particularly men, but also many women, who have become accustomed to expressing concerns by getting angry, need to learn to stop, to say, "I felt really angry," rather than to act angry. Then to take a step beyond that and to look at, why was I so angry? And that's, Steve, what you did so well. I was so angry then because I felt really left out and really jealous.
In the moment at the party, that's my needs were unmet, and I can relate that to Wendy and say, when we were there, I felt left out. But in this moment right now, I want to hurt her back. Mm-hmm. That's my, okay. You know,
that's
then I was like, yes, my needs weren't met. But right now, to give back in and say, yes, my needs weren't met at the party.
Okay, what you're doing now is very helpful. That is, you're talking about your anger instead of acting out the anger. Instead of acting angry, you're giving her the information how angry you are, and that is helpful. What comes up for you, Wendy, hearing how much anger is in Steve right now about that?
I don't know how to make his anger go away, because okay. I can't go back and change what happened at the party.
Right. Nobody can make his anger go away, first of all.
I can just understand
helpful,
that's
yes.
how he feels.
That's number one.
Okay.
And number two, both of you will be helped to the extent that you can take the next step with anger, which is to say, okay, I'm angry. That means there's something I want. So you need to ask yourself, right now, what do I want? You said, I want to wring her neck. Or something equivalent to that. What would that accomplish? You say not much. It's a bad solution. I agree with that. And yet, it's meant as a solution, getting angry or wringing her neck. What is it that you picture wringing her neck would accomplish?
It would release this anxiety. I'm holding it all in right now, and that seems to me to be to just...
Uh-huh.
Boom. So not physically, but...
So what you need is another release for your
yes.
tension that's there. Right
Her
now.
Understanding of my anger is not enough for me to just let it go.
Uh-huh. What else do you need to let it
go? I need to fly off the handle. I need to express it. Because it starts to come into me physically.
Okay. So then you need to think of a way to express it that's not going to be hurtful. What's some other ways you could express it? I'm going to give some information here. That's myth. I have this anger in me. I have to express it. There's a lot of good research data that says the more you express anger, the angrier you feel. The more you yell, the more likely you'll turn into becoming more violent. What you need to do when you have anger is breathe. Breathe. And breathe again. Think self-supportive, self-soothing thoughts. Now the thoughts may be, I can be strong even though I'm not being angry. Anger doesn't mean I'm strong. Or, I can get her to hear me without being loud or hurting her. Most of the time, when somebody's really angry, they basically want to be heard. And at the same time, as Steve said, anger is physiological within our bodies. Sometimes that adrenaline doesn't drain as quickly as we need. So he may need some release, like saying, Wendy, hold on a minute. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to walk around the house 3 times. I'll be right back, and then we'll talk. It is amazing how the combination of breathing, a little exercise, a little fresh air, and time can dwindle the feeling of anger down enough so you can then go back and talk constructively again. There's more to this, though. Were the apologies symmetrical? Is there anything that you feel like you need to apologize for? Anger is a position of self-righteousness. We seldom feel like there's anything that we did that was a problem when we're angry. However, after a few walks around the house, a little fresh air, a little time. Coming back.
I could have made it a stronger effort to engage with you while we were at the party. Yeah, I suppose. And I'm sorry for flying off the handle when we were leaving.
What made you laugh just then, Wendy?
I was sort of like looking to you. Is like that good enough? Is that enough of an apology yet?
And what would you say back to him, Wendy?
It is enough of an apology. And I accept it.
We're not finished yet. There's another very important piece. Do you want to keep repeating that kind of party experience again and again? Or what could you do different? So next time you two go to a party, it would work out for both of you.
Yeah.
There's actually something that's still unresolved here for me, which is the issue of jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
That really hurts me because...
I feel hurt.
I feel hurt because you're jealous of people who are my friends. I don't really understand why you get jealous.
That is a very productive direction. Jealousy is a common feeling that comes up with couples. It takes a lot of exploring what it is that's going on within the jealous person that causes jealous feelings to jump up so readily, and also exploring with the person who's the recipient of the jealousy. We won't have time now, but that question that you asked, Wendy, would merit exploring from both of you. Exploring would give the foundation for coming up with solutions. It would be similar to the exploring of underlying concerns on both sides that we did a few minutes ago. As we come to understand it, still, we wouldn't be finished in cleaning up unless, in addition to understanding, there's a plan of action for what you're going to do different at the next party. How about if each of you suggest one thing that you, not the other, you could do different that might help at the next party?
I'll try to involve you more and introduce you to more of the people at the party so that you feel a part of it and not leave you alone.
Maybe you better check if that would be helpful.
Would that be helpful?
Very much. Very much. And I will remain open-minded about your relationships with your friends before jumping to conclusions about their nature. Would that be helpful?
That would be very helpful.
Bravo. That is how couples keep from having the same upset come up over and over and over again. It's like weeding a garden. Weeds come up again. In most couples, it's the same one, two, or three fights that happen over and over. That same set of issues will come up again, only you'll be much more effective at very quickly doing something positive to keep it from emerging as a whole upset. You can learn to have some real understanding of what happened on both sides, say, I'm sorry, come up with a new plan of action on the basis of understanding. So that's cleaning up after toxic spills. Let's take just a few minutes now to bring closure to all that we've been doing. We began with some basic skills that probably seemed, oh, kind of real easy. What's the big deal? We then moved into how we use those skills to make decisions in a cooperative way instead of erupting into positional bargaining or conflict, settling things in ways that would leave unpleasant residues. And lastly, when there are upsets, a strategy for cleaning them up, taking them out of the realm of fault finding, and putting them into the realm of potential positive learning experiences. It would be nice if everybody could become instantly an expert at doing all of this. Unfortunately, it's like getting a lecture on football strategy. You're not ready to go out there and play on the field until you've done a bunch of practicing. I don't want to leave people with unrealistic expectations that having heard this information, oh, now it's easy. We're talking about replacing some elements of the tapes that are in your head with regard to resolving differences. In order to make that replacement, people need more than information. They need practice, they need repetitions, they need a lot of trial and error, they need a lot of understanding and sympathy when each were trying and it doesn't quite go the way it sounded when you first heard it. Realistically, practice, practice, repetitions. A last cautionary note, particularly if we grew up in a family where our parents didn't have the advantage of knowing these skills and trying to do the best they could, really gave us examples of a lot that was dysfunctional, anger, chaos, upset, or of silence, not talking about things, one person dominating the other, dysfunctional patterns. If you grew up in one that was dysfunctional, odds are you're going to have more difficulties than if you grew up in a family where the models were pretty helpful. It's not your fault, but it is likely that you may be somebody that needs to take advantage of the coaching that is available for people from counselors, from psychologists. There's a whole industry out there of people to help you improve your marriage. If reading self-help books and listening to tapes and hearing lectures alone doesn't seem to be quite enough, it doesn't mean that your marriage is hopeless. It just means you need extra coaching. I can think of very few activities or uses for money that can be as high payoff as getting help so that you can have a happy marital relationship and your kids can grow up in a harmonious household. Thank you for listening. You've been a delightful audience. Thank you.
This concludes the three-part series, Conflict Resolution for Couples, with Dr. Susan Heitler. The information on conflict management presented in these tapes is expanded further in Dr. Heitler's book, From Conflict to Resolution. Published by Norton & Company, From Conflict to Resolution can be purchased in bookstores or from Listen to Learn audio tapes. Other informative audio tapes by Dr. Heitler include Anxiety, Friend or Foe, Depression, A Disorder of Power, and Working with Couples in Conflict. To order Dr. Heitler's tapes or book, contact Listen to Learn, 1-800-919-8899. Audio tapes and the book From Conflict to Resolution may also be ordered by writing to Listen to Learn, 4500 East 9th Avenue, Suite 660, Denver, Colorado, 80220. Listen to Learn audio tapes encourages you to listen to tapes when you exercise, when you drive, during long-distance travels, and when you relax at home. Enjoy while you learn.